Good morning. Let me ask you to go ahead and take your seats if you're not seated yet. I'd like to welcome you to Leggett & Platt's Investor Day 2007. For those I haven't met, I'm Dave DeSaunier. I'm the Vice President of Strategy and Investor Relations, and we'll introduce the rest of the team in a moment. We probably will have about 30 to 45 minutes of prepared remarks, and then we will stay here and answer as many questions as you want for as long as you want. And I'll remind all of you that if you think of questions later, please feel free to call us. Susan and I will be back in the office later this afternoon and glad to take any calls. So you should have copies of slides in front of you. And if you did not see the press release yesterday, we've also got copies of those at the back. And we'd be glad to get you a copy. If you need one, just raise your hand and Susan will take care of that. For the folks on the webcast, the slides and the press release are both available on our website. And I guess with that, I'll go to the obligatory forward-looking statement slide. I know you guys are familiar with this. I'll just repeat it for the folks on the webcast. I won't read it, but much of what we'll be talking about has to do with future predictions and expectations. As you know, there's a lot of uncertainties and risks about any expectations or forecasts. There's a list of some of those risks here, and I'd also refer you to the 10-Q. As always, the statements we make today are our best belief as of today, and we undertake no duty to update those, although we expect that on many of these things we will be filling you in the future as well. And with that, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Dave Hafner.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning, and thank you for joining us here today. This slide outlines the topics that we'll be covering. Our presentation today clarifies the fact that Leggett is changing course, and we'll clarify why. We've been on an extreme rethink of how to create more value, resulting in several significant changes that we can truly be excited about and are committed to deliver on. While our slide presentation is a significantly condensed representation of the topics that we've been analyzing, it may be more than you want or need, but we feel it's important that you understand the depth of our thinking, the logic behind the changes, and our confidence in the expected results. The length of time of this analysis, we think, is directly correlated to the quality of the results. With us today, we have Carl Glassman, our Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer, Matt Flanagan, our Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, Dave DeSaunier, who you've met, Felix Wright, our Chairman of the Board, Susan McCoy, our Director of Investor Relations, and Crystal Hacker, who is an analyst on our Investor Relations staff. Okay, Dave. As I said in the press release yesterday, we intend to become better stewards of our shareholders' capital. Historically, Leggett has been revenue growth driven, but we've always been mindful of the need for profitability. Going forward, we will be focused on optimizing total shareholder return. And for the next 2 or 3 years, we'll focus on improving our returns and increasing our free cash flow of those businesses that stay in our portfolio. In 2010 or so, we expect to profitably grow at a rate greater than GDP while maintaining our total shareholder return focus. Now, we will continue to grow, and Carl and I will talk about some of the acquisition protocol and things as we go forward. But the first phase of this change is to become extremely competent with the businesses that we have in our portfolio. So why change? Why are we changing? Well, because our shareholder returns have suffered and for the past few years have been totally unacceptable. I know many of you realize that many of the shares are owned by inside management and employees, and we clearly understand firsthand that the performance has been unacceptable. Our returns on invested capital have fallen short of acceptable levels in certain of our business units. Other business units do just fine. But certain business units, that return has fallen significantly short of our requirements. And part of the portfolio has drug us down. The simple mathematics. The left side of this slide lists some of our strengths. We've always coveted market leadership and will continue to do so in those industries that we stay in. The next two bullet points, low-cost converters and product development, are the essence of how I summarize what we do. Oftentimes, maybe on an airplane or at some social event, and someone will ask me, well, what does Leggett & Platt do? And I look at my watch and think, gosh, you know, this is going to take a while. So I've boiled it down. This is my personal summation. We take very ordinary materials and we turn them into extraordinary products. That's effectively what we do, and we're really good at that. We're very customer-oriented. We have a global footprint, and we generate a lot of cash. On the right-hand side of this chart, in the spirit of a SWOT-type analysis, we list some of our weaknesses. We've been entirely too patient with certain business units and simultaneously overly optimistic about future results from them. The we can fix it attitude is not all bad, and we have fixed a good many things that needed to be fixed. But at times there are circumstances and influences that keep us from doing so, and we recognize that as a weakness, and we're not going to stand on that anymore. We've had less than adequate strategic planning in the past, and we have commenced a much more robust process which will be utilized going forward. We've already got two of our business units deeply involved in this more robust process, and over the next year or so, we'll have the rest of the business units go through this strategic planning process, which I'll say is substantially better, a more detailed and more capable process than what we've used in the past. This is an agenda slide. Talks about the key changes. For the next couple of years or so, we'll be cleaning up and strengthening our remaining portfolio businesses. Simultaneously, as I've said, we have already begun this more rigorous strategic planning process, and we're putting an extreme priority on total shareholder return. In a few minutes, Carl Glassman will elaborate on the new role-based business unit management practice, the rigors of business unit strategic planning, and our moves to reduce and focus the portfolio while generating better returns on what remains. I'll then address our increased dividend and commitment to continued buybacks, as well as our intentions to pursue profitable growth over the longer term. We're going to correlate and measure our success with total shareholder return. We will target Leggett's TSR to be in the top one-third of the S&P 500, which would put us in a range of about 12 to 15% TSR per year. Sources of TSR include increased earnings and cash yields, as well as the PE multiple. The first two of those can certainly have an impact on the third. Revenue growth will no longer be our primary focus. We are raising the bar of expectations for acquisitions and lowering our resistance to divestitures of businesses that are unacceptable performers. Sales growth, profitable sales growth, is just one of several TSR levers. And starting in 2008, our executive and business unit compensation incentives will be linked directly to TSR and the respective business unit returns. I'm going to ask Carl to take over here for a few minutes, and I'll be back shortly.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning. We appreciate your time and attention in joining us today. Role-based business unit management signifies departure from our historic one-size-fits-all style. Each of the business units have been placed in roles based on a number of criteria, such as competitive position, attractiveness of the markets in which they participate, their fit within Leggett or their connectivity, historic and expected future returns, and size and materiality. The distribution of the role placement of the existing business units is depicted by this pie chart. For those of you that don't have access, easy access to this slide, grow is 34%, core 39%, fix 9%, and divest 18%. Capital spending and acquisitions will be skewed to the grow category because of their advantage position. Core business units will be asked to maximize cash flow and improve their returns. Capital spending and acquisitions will be limited. Fixed businesses will be expected to rapidly improve or will be moved to the divest category. Our longer-term estimate of the mix between grow and core is approximately 50-50. There is significantly more detail as regards the portfolio role assignment process and future expectations contained in the backup slides to this formal presentation. Historically, we have employed limited strategic planning. We are in the early stages of deploying a much more rigorous process. Each business unit will be developing a viable, compelling strategy that identifies the key strategic issues for success. The plan will become the foundation to determine the business unit's longer-term role in the portfolio and will be the basis for future investment decisions and bonus payments. The plans will be rolling three-year looks with annual updates. Each will be required to have equal to or greater than annual TBR. TBR, or total business return, is the business unit equivalent of TSR, or total shareholder return. As a result of our portfolio management review, we have decided to divest the aluminum segment and six business units. We will walk away from some unacceptably low-margin business and store fixtures and sell, consolidate, or liquidate some underperforming locations which are housed within our grow and core business units. The result of these activities will be a reduction of approximately one-fifth of our revenue. We are aiming to complete these tasks by the end of 2008. The aluminum segment is currently undergoing a rapid restructuring analysis and has announced the closure of one facility. We have now engaged an investment banker to assist us in marketing the aluminum segment in total. The store fixtures business, which is a part of our fixtures and displays group, is also involved in rapid restructuring activities. We are exiting approximately $100 million of low-margin business. We will eliminate $180 million of productive capacity via the closure of four facilities. You may remember that at the time of our 2005-2006 restructuring, we had left some incremental capacity in place to take care of an expected market recovery. We are now eliminating that capacity and then some. The result will be in an expected increase in our utilization rates to approximately 80%. We have established firm key performance indicators that must be met, such as headcount reductions, closure deadlines, gross margin targets, and pricing discipline approval metrics, to name only a few. We expect to attain returns greater than or equal to our weighted average cost of capital by the fourth quarter of 2008. Due to the priority on these activities, we expect a 250 basis point run rate margin improvement by March of next year. We believe that a smaller, more profitable store fixtures business is good for our shareholders. This is a very compelling slide, and it is illustrative of our need to implement our strategy change. The rust color represents the divest businesses. In 2007, we expect to realize only $16 million of EBIT from $109 million of sales. That represents $854 million of our asset base. The slide is also a representation of our FICS opportunities, but also clearly illustrates a very healthy grow and core base. Despite the apparent health of the base portfolio, as indicated on the previous slide, we have far too many individual locations in the base that continue to underperform. Those business units must exhibit an ability to return greater than our weighted average cost of capital within 1 year, or they will be eliminated. A number of individual facilities have already been earmarked. The previously mentioned $200 million reduction in sales is related to those locations. We have increased our focus on a number of important initiatives. One of note is the requirement to significantly reduce our overhead cost as we operate a smaller, more focused company. We are dedicated to the precepts of continuous improvement and quality of products and processes. We will use these tools to lower our overhead and manufacturing cost and continue to invigorate our product development and innovation activities. Beginning in 2008, business unit bonuses will be directly linked to the return metrics for which those managers have direct control. In future years, the bonuses will be highly correlated to the strategic plan TBR targets. With that, I'll turn the presentation back to Dave.
All right, thanks, Carl. I think everybody here knows that historically we have generated a sizable amount of cash. And going forward, we should generate even more free cash for our shareholders. And we'll do that by implementing, as Carl said, more disciplined capital spending. We'll make fewer but more strategic acquisitions. We'll increase the return on the assets that we keep in the portfolio. We will continue our emphasis on working capital management, and we will sell some of those non-strategic business units. And we're going to send more of that cash to our shareholders. Our board of directors has authorized an increase in our dividend to $1 per share per year, a 39% increase from our current payment. This 25 cents per quarter will be payable in January to shareholders of record on the 14th of December next month. This incremental dividend will be more than offset by reductions in CapEx and acquisitions. And regarding our outstanding share base, we will continue our priority on share repurchases. As you know, our board of directors has authorized a standing 10 million share per calendar year repurchase plan and has pulled forward our 2008 authorization, as mentioned in our press release yesterday. As I mentioned earlier, for the next couple of years or so, we will be cleaning up our refocused portfolio, driving higher returns from that portfolio, and implementing stronger, more rigorous strategic planning processes. Beyond that, we expect profitable growth rates greater than GDP from expansion or acquisitions in current business units, as well as from new business units that are clearly advantaged and meet rigorous criteria. Part of this strategic planning process has been very helpful in allowing us to better understand the advantages and the strategic key indicators that need to be taken into consideration prior to spending our shareholders' money on acquisitions. We'll pursue profitable growth, but not at the expense of overall shareholder returns. In addition to maintaining or improving our market shares, we will focus our growth efforts on a narrower set of higher quality opportunities. This next slide is an agenda slide, and I'm going to ask Matt to come up here and Matt Flanagan, our Chief Financial Officer, and walk us through some of the expected results.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for being here and listening online. Well, first off, let's talk about costs, everything that Dave and Carl have walked through. And rest assured that we don't know for sure, but our best estimate at the moment is somewhere, very large range, mind you, of $150 to $300 million, virtually all non-cash costs associated with this restructuring activity. We do intend sometime in the middle part of December to come back to you with a better feel and certainly narrow that range as to what we at that point in time believe those costs will be. Because we've identified these seven operations for sale, there's quite an accounting convention that we will need to go through to review from an impairment standpoint. And that's what's causing us to have a bit of a challenge to give you an excellent estimate right now. But we did want to give you a feel for the magnitude, and that's what we're attempting to do here. Regarding guidance going forward for 2008, on January 24th, we'll announce our earnings and we'll give you our best prediction at that point in time as to what that might represent for 2008. You see there, and we mentioned this in our press release yesterday, that going forward, we intend to provide annual guidance and to update that every quarter as the year goes along. Many of you know that's a trend that's happening in corporate America now, and it's one we endorse and embrace. And frankly, as 2008 unfolds, we do know right now that it will be a bit of a bumpy ride just because of the timing of some of the divestitures that take place and the various costs that will come around the corner. So we talked about costs. Let's talk about sales. And Carl referenced this earlier. 2007, based upon our guidance right now, we should end the year at about $5.2 billion. The divest targets that we've talked about will take and peel off about $900 million in revenue. The fixed category, as part of that pruning process, we anticipate that about $100 million of revenue will disappear. Good thing that it's going away, but that will be a drop in revenue. In the poorly performing plants, or those plants that we have a real opportunity that we will have already in our core growth parts of the company that we can do a better job, and once again, probably let some revenue go that isn't providing a lot of shareholder value, that's about $200 million. So that's, you put all that together, that's $1.2 billion. The growth expectation going forward on our core base of activity and grow base of activity is 3% per year. It includes a little bit of acquisition activity, which you'll see in a moment, but that adds back somewhere between $300 and $350 million if all of that were to take place. And so by the year 2010, you're at a $4.3 billion company versus $5.2 today. So, of course, the key question as you look at that slide is, okay, well, how do you create a lot of value in the midst of shrinking the company nearly $1 billion in revenue? Well, you do that by going to a lot higher earnings contribution from what turns out to be a smaller base of activity. And here's how we would estimate right now, recognizing it's a forward-looking statement, but here's how we'd estimate to make that happen. In the divest categories that we've talked about, by undergoing that activity, we believe we'll add about 100 basis points by no longer having that revenue. And you saw the chart, I believe, that Carl had as to what little EBIT is being brought home to the party out of that amount of revenue that's taking place. So that'll be 100 basis points improvement in margin, all things being equal. In the fixed category, once again, letting go a lot of that revenue that's not contributing very much, that should be about 50 basis points. The poorly performing plants that Carl referenced, that again is a 100 basis point opportunity in round numbers. So there you get from 7.5% to 10% of those first three categories. Those things are largely within our control that we ought to be able to make happen to a great extent, no matter what the economic landscape is looking to us in those various markets. That last 100 basis points there, which is identified under initiatives, product development, efficiency, purchasing, continuous improvement, better discipline on pricing, those are the kinds of things and tools we'll use to go to 11% and hopefully beyond. So when you put all that together, if that were to take place, rest assured that 11% EBIT margin on a $4.3 billion amount of business is significantly greater than 7.5% EBIT contribution on a $5.2 billion amount of activity. So we've talked costs, sales, margins, talk a little bit about cash and where it's been spent, where we will spend it going forward. You know, it's an interesting slide. Obviously, a lot of history from 06 back, and 07 is an estimate. And of course, we've got roughly 11 months now almost in the barn. And what that shows you pretty clearly, look at 1999. We spent approximately $450 million in a combination of capital expenditures and acquisitions. Capital expenditures being the darker shaded part of each one of those silos. And the top side that's lighter shaded would be the acquisition activity. So $450 million is what we spent in 1999. Come as recently as the year 2005, and we spent nearly $350 million in those two buckets. And one of the main themes that's coming home to roost as part of our strategic review now is we believe both capital spending, now much more focused and targeted on the parts of our business where we see good returns that can be harvested, would be in the neighborhood of $130 million over the next 2 to 3 years, a lot different than the 160 plus in the last 2 or 3 years. And also acquisition activity, we expect to pull that back dramatically. These numbers of 25, 50, and 50 over the next 3 years, those are clearly just estimates, but it's reiterating the theme that we expect acquisition activity to be very modest going forward, partly because the threshold to make acquisitions is going to be much higher, and there's a significant portion of the company now, if they're in the fixed or divest categories, that aren't in the game to even look at acquisitions. So a very key part of the story today. Okay, this is my last slide, and this tends to boil all of what you've heard together again in a rough guesstimate, but certainly an estimate that we want to put before you for 07 to 2010 based upon these strategic changes. You see in 03 to 06, that's just history, and one of the things that Dave mentioned earlier is cash from operations. We have continued to generate a lot of cash within this company, even with the differing challenges we've had for the last several years. We expect that cash from operations to go up couple hundred million dollars even as we shrink the base. Returns on the assets, returns on the revenues should be higher, and we can see our way pretty clearly to helping make that happen. Divestitures, not very much historically. Something Leggett, frankly, has been accused of not being quick enough in that regard. That will be changing. We sold our prime foam operations earlier this year, as many of you recall, $80 million, so that's already happened. The $400 million estimate of asset sale proceeds from the divestitures that we now have on the table is where you get to the $500 million on that slide, and we're going to try very hard to make that divestiture activity take place in 2008. Capital spending and acquisitions we just looked at, and if you get to the free cash flow under that definition, it'll be greater than 2 times what we did the prior 4 years ending 2006 compared to the 4 years beginning with 07 looking forward. We believe that's an impressive opportunity to create shareholder value. You'll also know, and this is a key takeaway today, that we do not intend to change the balance sheet leverage of this company. That is not part of the magic wand that's being waved here. In fact, we continue to be very passionate about our leverage position and our credit ratings. So you see the net debt changes very little. In fact, it goes down perhaps slightly as we look forward. Therefore, the metric of cash that we can get back to our shareholders looking backward was about $1 billion during that 4-year period. Looking forward, a significant increase. Dividends are a big part of that. Moving to $1 a share was a major move, as you all can readily appreciate. Put this in perspective, for the last many years we've increased our dividends about 4 cents a year. That's been the run rate. We increased to 28 cents yesterday based upon the approval from our board of directors. That's about 7 years run rate of dividend increases that we brought forward to reiterate to everyone who's listening to our story that we're going to be very disciplined and we're very dedicated to executing the strategic initiatives that are part and parcel with that dividend conviction. And then lastly, we do anticipate to buy back a number of shares over the next several years as a function of the cash flow generation that will be taking place. Certainly don't know for sure what amount of share repurchase level that would be. Here's one estimate. And there will be a correlation with the divestiture proceeds that will play into our ability to buy back shares. That $400 million and when it occurs will be a big part of what allows us to buy back more shares. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Dave.
Thanks, Matt. Well, this is our final slide, at least to speak to, I promise. There are some backup slides in your handout which give you more detail, more color and detail on various of these points. The left side of this listing really summarizes those changes that we've discussed today. And while we're extremely excited and dedicated to those changes, certain things won't change. We're very proud of the principles of our company. Many of them are listed on the right side of this slide. Those things will continue. And I do want to draw your attention to the bullet on product innovation. It's something that we have put, our company's really been founded on product innovation throughout the years. The products that have been brought forward, really since the inception of the company. And it's allowed us to become market leaders in many of the industries that we participate in. And a couple of years ago, we revitalized that commitment to product innovation, not just for bedding or for home furniture, but across the entire corporation. And not just because of my engineering or technical background, but I am very, very excited for all of our shareholders, and I see what is proliferating out of that new idea center and creativity network that we have, and I must tell you that it's very exciting. So stand guard, stay tuned. I've got some summation comments that I want to share with you. You know, these are very significant but well thought out decisions. These changes we're making today are not necessarily all easy, but they're well thought out. Some of them are very tough and emotionally packed because they affect many of our employee partners, dear friends of ours, people that we've worked with and toiled with for many years. It's been very difficult to reach some of these decisions, but they're the right decisions. Our shareholders genuinely deserve the benefits that will be derived from these actions. Our management team is absolutely dedicated to the speedy implementation and, more importantly, the precise execution of this plan. And personally, I'm very excited about it. A lot of us have a lot of stock in this company. So personally, I'm excited about it, and for all of our employee shareholders, but also for the shareholder base at large. So with that, we'll wind up our comments, and I'm going to ask all the team members here from Leggett to be prepared to answer questions, and we're going to open it up to questions and answers from you as a group, and we've got some microphones that the girls will pass around. Thank you.
Good morning, Cliff Ransom. Very interesting plan. I've got a question that has to do with this issue of product innovation. Yes, it's been a hallmark of Leggett, but you're making some fairly significant shifts from having that, it appears to me, correct me if I'm wrong, from having that being internally driven to a much deeper focus on the customer. That requires a fairly significant mindset and typically requires a fairly significant investment as well. Can you talk to that point?
Yeah, Cliff, there's several elements of change to the way we're going about that. Historically, those pockets of product development were relatively dispersed throughout the corporation. They weren't centralized, and they tended to be internally driven. You're exactly right. We would come up with what we thought were some really intriguing products, and then we'd take them to the customers. And the customers would say, well, I like that one, or that one doesn't make much sense, or this one has some potential. And as a result of that, we continued to develop some good products that the customers would take forward. Unfortunately, in that scenario, it's not the most efficient use of research and development or technical time. It tends to be much better to go to the customer, or the approach we're taking now is that we're going to our customer's customer at times and helping our customer identify what their customer may really want or need. And as a result of some of those focus group sessions and early interactions with our customers, we're seeing our hit rate go up. The technical resources are relatively expensive, and so we want to see the hit rate go up, and we want to have those products that are developed, most of which will have intellectual property associated with them, be the things that our customers and our customer's customer really want or really need.
Does that require front-end loading of the expense structure that's material to us as investors?
It's, Cliff, it's not a material expense, but there are the way we deploy those expenses is a bit different. We've also widened the network of solicitation of ideas, knowing full well that there are ideas that come out of research centers, academia, and what have you. We had not taken advantage fully of that. So, Bud?
Bud Bugatch with Raymond James. A couple of questions. I'll ask a few and then come back later. You do mention cost of capital, weighted average cost of capital. We talked a little bit about this earlier. Can you give us what your range of that hurdle rate is and what you're using for the corporation?
Yeah, I'm going to ask Matt. We haven't talked about this since yesterday. So.
Yeah, but obviously a good question. It moves around every day based upon what the market value of our equity is. But we would estimate it's around 9.5% to 10%. That's a good estimate.
And that's what you're using as your hurdle rate there? That's the hurdle rate you're going to set?
That's the minimum hurdle rate.
That's correct.
Our expectation is higher than that.
Right.
If you pro forma the business, let's say the beginning of 2007 for where it will be, let's say by the end of 2008, what do you think your EPS would have been for this year if the business operated at that 10% lower revenue run rate? What would the EPS been this year? And I'll follow on with the other side of that question is, what do you think it will look like in 2010 when you get to the $4.3 billion and 11% op goal?
Well, the short answer is we don't know. When we come back for 2008 guidance, that'll be in the third week in January, we will be armed at that point in time with Carl and Dave's full review of all the operations, including the various restructurings that we're talking about, as well as the peel off of business that we're bucketing in the divest category. So I don't know the answer to your question, Bud, but I will tell you that 2008 recast based upon 2007 revenue levels that will be sustained going forward is hard to predict. But if you recall the slide that said we have about 7.5% EBIT margin, that's on continuing kind of without restructuring costs in 2007, we would expect, as we sit here today, that our core amount of activity in 2008, we should do a little bit better than that. Even if the economy isn't particularly exciting next year, we would expect some improvement. But the short answer is we just don't know until we get through all the detail.
The operating earnings, Bud, assuming that we don't have any deterioration in demand from where we're at, it's hard to imagine further deterioration could happen. But the operating earnings are going to go up just mathematically as we take things off that are not are either losing money or significantly below the corporate average. Mathematically, that's going to push it up.
That's why I asked the question on a pro forma basis for the year we're actually in right now. My math said it would have been somewhere in the $1.35 to $1.40 range for this year on a continuing basis, and then the math that gets me in the out years maybe to $1.90 to a $2.10 range in the 2010 time frame.
Well, you're right in the ranges that we have put together. We don't know, but your math is the same. We must do the same math in Florida that we do in Missouri.
Well, I hope so. I hope your real estate market's a little better than ours.
Back there, Susan.
Dave, last year at your Investor Day, you two goals were pronounced. You wanted a 16% ROE achieved by 2009 and 11% EBIT margin. And two questions, basically. You didn't mention an ROE target at all today, or at least I didn't see one. So if you could talk about that. But more importantly, on the EBIT margins, Carl stated that, you know, at that point in time, you thought you can get 11% EBIT margins within 24 months. Now today you're saying that you're getting rid of the worst of the businesses, but you're only, you know, looking to achieve an 11% EBIT margin. So there, from my perspective, there's a disconnect that I'd like you guys to bridge. If you're keeping the best of the businesses, why are you maintaining that same 11% EBIT margin?
Yeah, well, Matt did mention or better. when he showed that waterfall or water spring slide. And I would tell you that we'd be disappointed if it takes that long to get to 11%. But there's a certain degree of conservatism. We don't really know what is going to happen in the interim. If you take a look at that slide and if you recall that, there were some additions from the divestitures. There was an addition from continuing to improve what we have. I was talking to Cliff a little bit earlier about some of the manufacturing optimization methodologies that he's very skilled in and we're very familiar with that we have continued to use. And so we're not saying that 11% is where we're going to be totally satisfied. That's where we conservatively feel we can get in that period of time. The rest of your question was return on equity?
Yeah. And we would say what we've had presented today would correlate to return on equity in the neighborhood of 15-16% is how that math, if that were to happen, takes place. And back on the question on EBIT margins, I would also just add that compared to 12 months ago, our view of some of the next 12 to 18 months, economic landscape's probably a little bit more dour than it was 12 months ago.
But they're good questions. Pat.
David, congratulations on embracing change rather than have change engulf you. It's clear what your plan is with respect to business units. If we could ratchet one level higher to end markets and to foreign sourced versus domestic source of business, if you will, can you sort of sketch for us what changes will occur there? And I'm thinking because you know the two pots of 50% grow and 50% core, and the way you've structured your strategy now, clearly the growth attributes will cause that to rise in the future. So can you give us, with respect once again to end markets and to foreign versus domestic, how this company is going to proceed?
Okay, let me address the globalization aspect of it, Carl, and you guys might want to be thinking about how you would discuss the end markets. It is a little bit of a disadvantage for everybody because we know what's in those grow silos, what's in those core silos, and incidentally, being in a core silo is not a bad thing at all. It's a very good thing. And there may be growth, and there will be growth in those core businesses as we maintain or extend our market share. But from a globalization perspective, it is reasonable to assume that we will continue to find ways to move manufacturing activities to lower cost parts of the world. Not because we like to export jobs, Pat, I know you know that. Many times, and we have relatively low labor content in most of the products that we produce. There's a combination of the cost of raw materials and the currency exchange and the cost of labor and the overheads and all that comes into play. But many times our customers have a lot of labor in their product, and therefore our customers are really required to go to other parts of the world. And we want them to continue to buy Leggett & Platt product. And as a result of that, since the continents aren't getting any closer and the cost of containerization and freight continues to go up, we've been pretty compelled to go get closer to those customers. And in that process, I'm leading up to the fact that we have enjoyed a very, very good return on the investments that we've made outside of North America. In fact, greater than the corporate average. That's the good news. The bad news is we don't have a couple billion dollars invested. And we won't. We'll take it in small bites. We'll be very careful. We'll make sure that we're going in the right territories. With the RMB strengthening, with some things happening with VAT taxes, with some inflation and labor availability in certain parts of China specifically, we'll be looking at other territories. So that's part of the globalization. Another part is We've asked our people to step back in each one of their manufacturing operations and ask themselves the hard questions. If you take a look at your top 100 products that you produce, which of those are highly likely to be targets to be competitively produced elsewhere, outsourced, if you will? And you know, that's pretty tough for a manufacturing guy or gal to do, to think about winding or constricting their operation and purchasing a particular component or subassembly from other parts of the world. But in doing so, we found some pretty interesting money saving and excellent quality opportunities. The logistics associated with that are greater, more complex, but we have very good procurement people, sourcing people, and so we're also looking at it that way. We're not so coveted with our own or in love with our own manufacturing operations that we won't consider buying from you, wherever you happen to be, but many times that happens to be on another continent. And with regard to the markets.
Yeah, Pat, the way that I would answer that question in part is that 2006, our foreign sales were about 21%. We would forecast them 2010 to be north of 30% for two reasons. One is the divestitures are heavy weighted to domestic businesses. We expect the world economies to continue to be more robust in the near term out years than the domestic economy. We're experiencing today significant growth in our international markets. We expect, when we break down those markets into our grow and core characterization of roles, there is a very heavy weight of domestically consumed on an international basis sales that are in those territories. So you will see us continue to become more global, not exclusively from a sourcing perspective, but from a localized sales perspective.
I might comment on some of the basic markets that we participate in. The bedding industry tends to be, for the most part, immune to having finished product imported in here. There's a bit of that. There are some components that have come in. We've addressed that pretty aggressively. The bedding industry is relatively flat here for the time being. So if you take a look outside the United States, though, our performance has improved significantly in bedding in other parts of the world, Europe being a good example. Automotive, that makes me think of automotive. Automotive, we're finally seeing some life here in North America. You may all recall that we're suppliers of seat suspensions and lumbar mechanisms, and they tend to have a lot of intellectual property, so we've maintained reasonable margins even in a very soft North American market. But our demand for product in Europe and Asia has been significant. Again, thank goodness for our global footprint. Residential furnishings, you know, what percentage of that's ultimately going to be made in low-cost countries? That's something that you might want to address, Carl.
Well, side note, today our residential furnishing segments are 35% international. So that's just an indicator of where we may go directionally. For many of the reasons that Dave discussed, I don't see a significant trend for our residential businesses, for those manufacturers that are domestic-based, to move their manufacturing capacity offshore. I personally believe we've seen the bulk of that. We're seeing some strong, domestic, efficient manufacturers who had historically moved some of their manufacturing capacity overseas, move that back to the United States. Will the trend move back? I don't know. I don't expect a continued acceleration, though, of departure from the continental United States.
Laura? Laura Champagne from Morgan Keegan. I was surprised to see an outlook for proceeds from divestitures in the press release, and it looks like you'd like to achieve over $500 million on a $16 million EBIT stream. and even the sales multiple looks a little optimistic. This makes me think perhaps you're closer to divesting them than I would otherwise think. Maybe you could comment on where you are in that process and your confidence in those that proceeds
and
amount.
You don't want to comment on cash flow as opposed to EBIT.
One quick clarification, first of all, is that the $500 million you just mentioned, that's in the number for 2007, but it already includes $80 million from the Prime Foam divestiture. So the target, and it's only a target, is $400 million after tax from the various operations we've identified. We obviously don't know for sure. We've just made the decisions as of yesterday to move forward with this plan. Also, no question that the aluminum segment is the big swinger as to what does or doesn't take place in that amount of activity. As Carl mentioned, we do have an investment banker engaged right now who's given us at least some sense for valuation. So the short answer is, Laura, that's a big unknown. But again, in the spirit of trying to give you a feel for magnitude, what will come to pass will come to pass. We'll see. But that's our best guess right
now.
Well,
also, if you would look, and we didn't put an EBITDA or cash element up on that chart, but if you took a look at the cash that those businesses are generating, it's significantly less of a leap.
That slide, that point of reference, is $52 million of cash flow from those divest locations. So on an EBITDA basis, it is not a significant leap.
So is it fair to say that you're just starting the process and aren't necessarily even in an advanced stage of negotiations?
That's exactly right.
That is very fair.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yes.
Keith? Keith Hughes, SunTrust Robinson Humphrey. On slide 20, when you build the margin ladder from 7.5 to 11, you had talked about the first three buckets being things you could control. It seems as though those would be done well before 2010. Am I making the wrong assumption there, or what's your view on that?
No, Keith,
That's part of the reason I said we'd be very disappointed if it took us till 2010, but we want to be conservative here.
And Keith, I would add, and this is a very, very important theme, the fact that we are now asking our business unit managers to orchestrate and lead the charge based upon what category they're in, as opposed to everybody in the past saying, go grow, make it happen, and we'll track you. There's a real enthusiasm that you can just feel. I know Carl sensed it, you know, right away, that we're now asking the folks in these various categories to do what they can do. If it's optimized cash and efficiency, that's much better than if they just haven't had a chance, really, to do a lot of growing here in the last few years because of the market they're in, market share, what have you. So the behavior and the opportunity to really drive results now that they have metrics that are significantly different than what they have really ought to allow this EBIT margin performance to show up a lot sooner than 2010.
You know, one of the elements, this is just a kind of a field trial test. You take a look at the cash that we've been able to generate through better working capital management. Part of that would have happened anyway, but part of it has to do with the mindset that our individuals are going to be judged and rewarded based upon free cash flow coming out of their individual parts of the company. So we're already not just moderately seeing it, we're seeing it happen. And the capital forecast budget was a good example of that, Carl.
And Keith, I would offer that this fourth column initiatives is also within our control. And I have a high degree of confidence that we will execute in that bucket. And you know, that's kind of my area of responsibility. And we will achieve that and more.
Final question on share repurchase. You had talked about accelerating the 10 million shares you're going to buy in 08 starting effectively now to start that process. How is the board going to view share repurchase in the future? Are we just going to see a fixed amount every year? Is that going to be based on just market conditions, how much you buy? What kind of guidance can you give us on that?
Yeah, good question.
Thank you, Keith, and I'll try to answer that. That obviously, with the board stepping up and moving this 10 million share authorization forward, I think it just expresses the board's confidence in what we have, the plan that has come up with, and management's ability to execute that plan. As we go forward with the sale of these businesses and the cash that's generated, et cetera, the board is certainly willing to move forward in whatever makes sense in the use of that cash in buying shares back in more than the 10 million share authorization that we have today, or if there is another better utilization of that cash that management could bring forward, that we would use it. So the 10 million share authorization is not a limiting factor, but it is one they wanted to pull forward to give management the opportunity to react if need be as we go forward now. But it's not a limiting opportunity.
Is the board willing at a price to borrow money short term?
It's not in our game plan right now to leverage the balance sheet up any further, to wind up and just to buy equity. Yes, the board is certainly willing to buy more shares, but we're not really willing to get that balance sheet too far out of whack from where we got it today.
Ron Fisher, why leave the growth piece out of this puzzle? You've got strong balance sheet. You have good cash flow. You know, in good times and bad. The residential infrastructure market, for lack of a better word, is in a bit of disarray. So companies, acquisitions have to be more readily available than they used to. But you're saying for the next 2 years we're not going to grow. Are you missing an opportunity by stepping aside, by laying up short at this point?
Yeah. Ron, as I mentioned earlier, before we started, there will be opportunities. And the timing, we don't know when they're going to happen. We don't know when these attractive fish are going to swim by. But we do know that when they do, we'll rigorously assess whether or not that particular entity would be advantaged under legged ownership. And if it is, and if there's a true compelling opportunity, then we will make those acquisitions. In the core parts, what we classify as core parts of our business, we'll be less interested in doing that than we will in the grow parts of our business. But it would be inappropriate for any of you to leave the room and think that we are going to ignore those opportunities when they come up. It's just that we are going to be less willing to make those acquisitions and less aggressive in making those acquisitions than we have in the past. Sean?
Hi, I have a few quick but random questions. One, did you use an outside consultant to help you with the strategic review?
Yes, we did. We started a portfolio review a little over a year ago. And I think some of you know that from some restructuring things that we were doing. And we decided, our board of directors, Carl and I are on that board, Felix is on that board, we decided that we saw the opportunity, we saw the need, and we needed additional resources. So we went and talked to four major companies, you could probably imagine which four they were, and we went through a pretty rigorous screening process and determined which one represented the best opportunity. We brought them in to help us, and what that did, not only did they provide us with a tremendous amount of business acumen and experience in other types of procedures like this, but it also sped up the timing because of all the business units that we've had. We also wanted an outside group that would not only help us through this particular phase change, if you will, of the company, but to help us implement a very strong, very rigorous strategic planning process. And they continue to be engaged today, certainly less time consuming than what we've been doing for the last 9 months, but we're very pleased, very, very pleased with the return on that investment.
Okay, and outside of administration function sharing, the business units that are being divested, are there any overlap with Salesforce or, you know, any type of synergies? Or are these just isolated units?
In very limited cases, generally no, but in some of the, certainly not in the aluminum side, in some of the six business units that will ultimately be divested, there is some minimal overlap in sales representation in a couple of those, but it is minimal.
Okay, and then lastly on slide 22, just on a prospective basis, the ratio of CapEx to D&A, and also that's one, and then the second part of the question is just working capital assumption.
Yeah, our capital, or our depreciation and amortization, again, recognizing that 2008 will be a bit of an odd year because in 2007, for that matter, based upon whatever restructuring costs, but run rate, D&A is about $170, $175 million. So when you see $130, $125, that's certainly significantly lower. But I would reiterate what Dave said earlier is that as we pull back on that capital spending, it's really simply being a much better steward of where we're spending capital. And in the past, where every one of our business units was really challenged to grow, they were working hard to make that happen and wanting to solicit capital to help make that take place. Now, as we're just much more focused and targeted on grow categories, how much capital do you need, and go grow even more than what used to be our corporate target. Your core operations, capital is available, but it'll be really highly correlated with efficiency. And fix and divest, there's not a lot of capital around for you to be calling for. So
the ratio, though, is roughly equal? You know, where, like, how much higher is CapEx and D&A in 2010?
They would be roughly equal by the time you get to a steady state in 2010.
Okay. Working capital as a percentage of sales in 2010 is probably better than what it is today.
Should be.
Should be better.
Certainly should be.
I was going to say, too, that each one of the profit centers has targets for working capital. It's a topic that I've spoken with a few of you throughout the years. We see it as a real opportunity. Those targets continue to be refined, and while we're consuming working capital about 19% of sales or a little over right now, it should be better going forward. Yes?
If you've been working with people on this plan for about a year now, could you maybe talk a little bit about what prompted you to start the review and whether you had any internal or external pressure or changes that caused you to start thinking about doing this?
Well, yes. What really prompted us to start the review is a lack of performance, a lack of meeting our expectation, an interest in being able to put forth a forecast and meet that forecast. And so it really goes back a couple of years when we started to peel the onion away and take a look at, well, how is it that we believe certain things in a budgetary process, and over time we fail to meet those expectations? And so we started that process. And then earlier this year, in February of this year, we discussed it at a board level, and all of us as board members decided that we needed to accelerate the process. And that's what really prompted Dave DeSaunier and I did most of the heavy lifting on solicitation of the consultants, and we just wanted to get those types of people, those quantitative, empirical minds to come in here and help us make sure that we weren't drinking our own Kool-Aid. And so really it was prompted because we weren't satisfied, absolutely not satisfied. Many of us are, I'll just say, heavily invested in the company. But more than that, we've got a shareholder base that for a few years here has not been properly rewarded. And so we had to make changes. We needed to make change.
Yes, David.
Yeah,
David. David McGregor with Longbow Research. At two or three points in the presentation, you make reference to pricing and in the need to focus on pricing. Carl, in slide 20, you characterize pricing as one of the things that one of the initiatives that management could control. What changes as you think about the pricing in the businesses that you're going to keep? Are you pushing accountability further down the organization? Are you changing incentive structures around pricing? What makes you think you can control pricing, and you know, how are you going to do better on that front?
Well, a series of very good questions. The answer is that we have not been as pricing efficient in some of our businesses as we should have been, because in many cases of pressures to fill existing capacity in an overcapacitized state. So as we've right-sized our capacity, we have less overhead contribution to fill, so we've been able to be more realistic in our pricing expectations. And quite frankly, there has not been enough discipline in some of our business units into understanding cost, expected gross margins, and getting approvals at high enough levels. So actually, the responsibility for some of those pricing disciplines or the pricing matrix that I made reference to is at a higher level of sign-off. Unfortunately, in the past, people sometimes too low in the organization were making decisions that were not held accountable for the returns of the impact of those decisions. The other significant change is by our pushing down our bonus payments or calculations down to the business unit level, there is a greater accountability for returns as opposed to performance to an expectation of EBIT percentage. So that's where pricing, I believe it's going to become self-policing because of our incentive programs, but we are ensuring ourselves of improvement.
And Dave, what I'd say to that is no one really likes to go to a customer or a customer base and raise price. That's never really a fun interaction. But part of our business simply wasn't priced right. And so when it gets to the point where you're better off incrementally without that business, and you can go to a customer honestly and say, Dave, we here's the situation, and we really need to help you find another vendor. We value your relationship, but because of a series of circumstances, we can't continue to provide you this product or this series of products at these prices, and do so openly and honestly. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes that business goes away for a period of time and it comes back at a transfer price that is a more reasonable margin. And so we just got to that point with some of our business. I think there's one over here, Cliff, first.
I was interested in studying the chart 20 a little bit more closely. That's the one with the EBIT margin of 11%. And springboarding off the pricing question, can you just detail which segments you feel you have an opportunity to take price that you haven't taken it before, the impact that you might have on volumes because given the economy? And also, is that the biggest piece of the, it looks like there's really one point from four different initiatives that you're expecting. And is pricing the biggest part, and is one point too little? I mean, that's really a bunch of questions. Sorry.
No, they're good questions.
They're all good questions. I think I can roll them all together and answer it this way. I think one point's too little, but that's me, and I'm responsible for that area. So, but we're also conservative by nature, and we're tired of overcommitting and underperforming. Pricing is not the most significant. It's one of the elements in that bar of initiatives. Product development is, in my mind, the most significant, but efficiency has significant bearing also. Purchasing, we're doing a better job of aggregating our spend and getting leverage across the spend. So they're all key elements. I'm going to have a hard time answering your question about which one of the business units or segments doesn't do as good a job as pricing efficiency as the others, because they all have room for improvement. There are some specific areas, most probably store fixtures, that has underperformed, most of it because of excess capacity that's available, but that issue is apparent in many of our other businesses. In many cases, and this goes back to part of the question that Dave McGregor asked, that we in many cases probably have not properly priced our product development initiatives. With the state of the economy for many of our products in the last couple years, we probably have not valued innovation highly enough, and we will do a better job of that in the future. I don't know if I hit all your bullet points.
Wes?
Yeah, David, that really relates to my question about the chart number 40, I guess it is, because there's some substantial differences between the EBIT margins in 2006 and what we're looking for. And the question is, are these sort of guesses, or we've spent a lot of time talking about rigorous analysis, and what are the points, and perhaps pricing is the most important that you've considered to get these higher margins. You look at commercial and specialized, for example, is substantially different from 2006.
Yeah, Wes, we went back and did a lot of historical analysis, taking a look at the size of the company, the margins that were being generated from each of the segments, and even deeper down than that. We attempted to look at and understand the amount of profitability evaporation due to competition. We took a look at globalization, the impact on margins associated from that, capacity utilization. It's interesting, when you go back, we can we had a year in the not too distant past where we were at about $4.3 billion and 11%. And so so we walked back through that in each one of the segments, because what we didn't want to do, and mind you, this is an important point here. Part of these are include intercompany and total company, of course, is on trade. But we walked back through that and said, let's establish targets that are real, attainable, are not slam dunks necessarily, that we will hold our people accountable for, and that are credible. And that's where we came up with those. Again, personally, many of us will be disappointed if it takes us till the end of 2010 to get there. Yeah.
Hi, Dave. Ira. Just a couple of different questions here. First, could you just kind of give us an update on just sort of the state of your key businesses today, and kind of what you guys are seeing, and as you look out, you know, over the next, you know, few months or so, where you have probably pretty decent visibility, kind of how that's going. Maybe start with that.
All right, Carl, he's got a perfect crystal ball.
I can't give you a state of the business today because we have not updated guidance. We'll be doing that later in the fourth quarter when we have a better handle of what our restructuring charges look like. So I'll go back to third quarter. As we said on the last conference call, business is under pressure. Most of our businesses that have a high housing component are under pressure. Our international businesses are much stronger than our domestic businesses. The crystal ball element, all of our forecasts anticipate that 2008 will show no improvement. And some of us believe there may be slight deterioration. So right-sizing this company right now is very, very important to us. But we don't see anything from a housing perspective that will show any recovery into the first half of 2009.
Here in North America.
Correct. Okay. International market buoyancy, we don't expect any real change there. That the emerging markets continue to experience accelerated consumption, and we don't see many things to slow that down.
Okay. And then just in terms of trying to understand the shareholder value creation from some of the capital deployment changes you guys are making, I mean, first with the divestitures, as you look at those businesses you guys are going to divest, are they going to be worth more in someone else's hands than they are in yours, do you think?
Ira, we think so. And a good recent past example of that is our foam divestiture. I know certain people within the organization wondered whether or not, you know, that's something we should do. It was a compelling opportunity. And that business, those assets that we sold at a fair price for our shareholders, are really more valuable in the current owner's possession than they were for us. And I would also say that the individuals managing that company are better off today as a result of that transaction than they were as a part of our organization. So we've put together some estimates of proceeds from those businesses they've been reasonably empirical on multiples of cash flow and those types of things. But we believe that those businesses generally are good business models, but are likely to be of more value in the hands of some other people than ours. An example of this I was mentioning to another person earlier. You know, in a business that's a purchase for resale and distribution, we do that okay in some parts of our business, but there's one of those business units where there's been sort of a sea change relative to purchase now and distributing as opposed to manufacturing and distributing. And we think that business would probably be worth more to somebody else that really does that as their primary focus. So, we hope we've been conservative in establishing the estimate of proceeds. As we said on the big piece of this, we've already engaged an investment banker and have had some preliminary discussions. Very preliminary, Laura, but we will wind that up pretty quickly here now. So,
yeah, Ira, specific to the aluminum segment, that business is extremely well managed. They outperform their peers in that industry. It is a business that maybe isn't best in a public company's hands, but those people are good operators of a business. They probably need a parent that has a willingness to invest in international markets, and it was a fit issue with Leggett. It's a good business and will perform extremely well in another owner's hands. Maybe a public company isn't the right home for that business.
And then when you think about just the reduction in the CapEx that you're looking at and the reduction in expenditures on acquisitions, do you think you've been earning kind of less than that, I don't know, 10% or so cost of capital hurdle on those as you look back over the last 2 or 3 years?
Some of them. And that's an interesting question. But the answer would be yes on some of them, but we've got many of our operations do an extremely good job of buying a widget maker or an asset and depreciating it over 7 or 10 years and running it for 12 or 15 or more years. And of course, the return on those assets, on the net asset, goes way up once you get past that depreciable life. But some of those, yes, we have not seen an adequate return. I'd say the majority of them for that. Remember, half of that capital expenditure, Ira, goes to sort of maintenance, things that fixing the roof and, you know, replacing the motors and those and the moving equipment, material handling equipment. The other half, a portion of it, might not have returned adequately, but most of it would have. That's the way I would respond to that. Okay, Cliff, or wait a minute, who is it? Susan.
You relatively recently put an acquisition role in place in each of the business units. And given the change in acquisitions and your whole thought process there, can you give us some idea of how that role might change or might function in the future?
Yeah, before I'll let Carl expand on it, but I you're right. We put some very competent individuals in place. I would say that they weren't put in place for acquisition per se. They're business development people, which includes acquisition, and they will continue to be those individuals that the segment leaders rely heavily on for targeting and enterprise valuation and those sorts of things for acquisitions. But they weren't predominantly there for acquisitions, and those people are still with us. Carl?
Yeah, Susan, thank you for giving me an opportunity, because those five people are extremely capable, extremely dedicated. That the use of two of them has shifted into a strategic planning analysis role, helping us through that process. They have been engaged with the help of the consulting group to kind of train the trainers, sort of thing. And they're very competent.